It is episode number 14 of the River City Hardball Podcast, talking baseball in the city of Jacksonville at the high school, college, and professional levels. On today's podcast, my friend Emily Walden joins us. She's a national prospect writer for The Athletic. We recorded this conversation on Thursday, the day that opening day would have started around minor league baseball. Emily has covered minor league baseball for 6 years now. What does she think of the shutdown right now? What are players and coaches saying about it? Who are some of her favorite prospects going into 2020? And when might we see baseball again? Here's my conversation with Emily Walden from The Athletic. Emily, first of all, thanks for joining us, and I hope you're doing okay. This is a very tough time for a lot of people with this coronavirus. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there for sure. Thanks again for having me, and happy minor league opening day to you.
That's right. Yeah, it would have been starting today. Let me ask you this. Minor league baseball would have started today. Here in Jacksonville, we are the Miami Marlins affiliate, the AA affiliate, and the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp. They used to be called the Suns. Now they're the Jumbo Shrimp. They would have started things off tonight playing baseball. Where would you have been if everything had started on time? Where would you have been tonight, and who would you have been covering?
Yeah, my general opening day location is the Class A West Michigan Whitecaps. They are the Class A affiliate of the Detroit Tigers, which is the team in my home state here in Michigan. So I do have a lot of exposure to their organization, and they are part of the territory that I cover. So they are probably 10 minutes from my house. So that's a park I tend to spend most of my summer at and see just a lot of different teams that come through, and it gives me good exposure to the guys I need to be following.
You know, and it's such a shame that, Emily, we're not able to see baseball being played right now and what would have been the first day of minor league baseball. I mean, what's it like for you, somebody that covers prospects and covers minor league baseball? I mean, it's a gut punch, isn't it?
Oh, it definitely is. It's something that none of us wanted to see happen. None of us wanted to have a stretch of time this long with no baseball. But I think looking at a big picture, you have a better understanding for the health of everybody involved. And obviously we don't want to jeopardize anybody or separate families and create more of a stress and a headache for people. So there's definitely pros and cons to it. You want to keep health at the forefront. I think that's what everybody's focused on doing right now.
Talking about the stress and the headaches and what so many people are dealing with right now, let's talk about minor league baseball in that vein, Emily. You've been at the forefront of helping guys in minor league baseball really raise funds for these guys because, as we know, they don't get paid a whole lot. And just tell us about the origination of how you came up with the idea to help raise money for those guys.
Yeah, that whole process was just direct donation between the fans and the players. I had a lot of fans reach out to me and say, you know, hey, I heard about the position that these minor league players are in. What can I do to help? I'd like to donate. So it was just a matter of doing some networking and getting the players connected to the fans. And they raised over $13,000 of donations for the players. And we were able to also get some employment lined up for them as well. So just trying to make the most of all of the free time that we have right now and trying to use it to take care of some people in a good way.
That's terrific. How many players have reached out to you to either thank you or anything like that? How many guys have reached out? I would think several.
Oh, quite a few. Yeah, there's a really, really great collection of young guys in the system right now. No matter what organization they're with, so many of these guys have been raised well. They've been raised to be polite and to be grateful. And even for the guys who came in with like the really big signing bonuses, they're still in the same boat. They're still, you know, having to navigate the crazy schedule and, you know, traveling on the road and being with these minor league affiliates. It's stressful for everybody, no matter what your signing bonus looks like. So they're all in a similar position, and I think any assistance is appreciated by all of them.
You know, minor league baseball players haven't been paid since last September. Now, I know that Major League Baseball has a new stipulation where they're going to continue to pay minor leaguers, but is that right? They hadn't been paid since last September?
Correct. Yeah, they don't receive any paychecks during spring training. They get their first paycheck once the official season begins, which would have been today. And since the season obviously has been postponed, they did step up and say players would receive Some funds, either I believe it was until May 1st or the start of minor league baseball. The tricky part about that is there's still a question of if we'll even see minor league baseball this year. So still a lot of questions up in the air with that, but we're hoping that the league and the owners step up and make sure their guys are taken care of.
Do you think that the efforts that you helped contribute to with the raising money of the minor league players, do you think some of that played a factor in Rob Manfred and Major League Baseball saying, hey, we probably should give the minor league players something?
You know, I try not to make it too much about me. It's more about, I think, the fact so many people have been speaking up since this stuff has been happening, that at the end of the day, it's hard to ignore when you have that many voices involved. I like to think that I was able to contribute, but when it comes down to it, I think it really was a group effort. Just trying to raise awareness for these guys and trying to make sure they were taken care of.
You know, Emily, in every aspect of what we're dealing with right now in the world and coronavirus, you have to think of the doomsday scenario, and you just mentioned it. What if there's no minor league baseball this season? I mean, that would just be devastating, obviously. What are you thinking about that right now? Is it, you know, there's obviously a chance of that, but don't you think that they have to be able to play at some point?
That's the question, honestly, right now, because if they do get started in a quote-unquote safer environment, we could be looking at June or July at the soonest when that's considered cleared. And if you kind of break it down from there, the minor league season, the regular season portion, is usually done by the first week of September. So then you have to ask, do we play, you know, 1.5 months of baseball or maybe even less than that? Does it really make sense to open up all the parks, to get the staff, to do all of that stuff? There's just so many questions and so many different factors involved that I think it's what's putting the team in such a tricky position, because you don't want to call things off too early, but you also have to ask yourself, is it going to be worth it with such a limited amount of time to deal with?
Being a national prospect writer, you talk to a lot of players, you talk to a lot of coaches. What are they saying? What are they telling you about the precarious situation that we're in right now?
They're all pretty much in the same boat. It's like I've explained to people before that there's really not a lot of confirmed insight into how this is going to play out, because I don't think people really know. I think even the league itself is still trying to sort through everything. So from the players' perspective, they're just doing their best to stay sharp physically. Some of them have access to workout facilities at home. Some of them have been kind of coming up with their own garage setup with some makeshift weights and things like that. But it's tricky for everybody. The coaches want to handle it correctly. The players want to handle it correctly. And like I mentioned before, health really needs to be at the forefront of that decision.
Emily, let's focus on some of these prospects that you cover. First of all, let's focus in Jacksonville, being the AA affiliate of the Marlins. Are there anybody in the Marlins system that you have your eye on this year?
Oh, yeah. They've got a few near the top that I think are really starting to blossom, if you will, and kind of come into their own. One who I've always been a fan of is Jazz Chisholm, shortstop in the system. And I know MLB Pipeline has him ranked as the number 3 prospect right now in the organization. And he is somebody who I think thrives off of his energy. He's very, very quick and just twitchy and has the type of play that you like to see from an infielder. He's not that big. He's only about 5'11", so he's got a good size. He's able to move quick at his position. Still young, just turned 22 in February. So he's somebody you definitely keep an eye on, as well as Sixto Sanchez. He is somebody who hasn't been with the Marlins extremely long. He was originally with the Philly system and got brought over, and he's a velocity guy. He's a huge velocity guy, about 6 foot, just turned 21 not that long ago. And that's a big arm that I know the Marlins are going to have some fun developing.
Yeah, I actually got a chance to sit behind home plate last year at a Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp game to watch Sixto pitch, and the velocity that the mitt pops, a thunderous pop of the mitt when Sixto Sanchez gets ready to unleash it. One thing that I really was puzzled about last year was the Marlins trading Zach Gallen to the Diamondbacks, and I think, wasn't Chisholm involved in that trade? I think he was, but I just couldn't figure out why the Marlins traded Zach Gallen. Any thought on that?
You know, I didn't dig too deep into that specific exchange. I know there were several several trades last year from different organizations that left the fans kind of going, not sure what that logic was. But, you know, you have to just sort of look at big picture for those kind of situations. I think a lot of times front offices are seeing things that maybe fans don't see. And then there's other times where any front office guy will tell you, hey, sometimes you make the right call, sometimes you don't. So I think it just depends who the decision makers are and if they're able to see what the long-term value that these guys could bring. But again, with prospects, most of them are still a gamble, so you just have to hope that you make the right move.
Emily, who are some of your favorite prospects going into 2020?
Yeah, gosh, there are so many, and I think that's partly why it was so frustrating to see such a delay right now. Specifically with the Padres, Luis Patino is somebody who I've been following very closely since he was with Class A Fort Wayne. He's big, big arm, gets up to about 100 to 101 max on his fastball. Very, very close friends with Mackenzie Gore, who's obviously the other top arm in the Padres system coming up right now. And I think for them, it's a lot of hope for the fan base. They've had to wait a bit to see some things to get excited about. And on the prospect front, the Padres still have one of, in my opinion, one of the top systems in the league. Wander Franco, who's another one that we had kind of touched on at one point, got to see him in the Midwest League, and he is somebody who is worth all of the hype. Everybody's been talking about him for a really long time just because of his natural abilities. He's got a very raw athleticism to him. Obviously, still very young, so there's a lot of maturing left, but his body is filling out really, really nice, really good defensive instincts, really natural feel at the plate. So definitely somebody to keep an eye on moving forward.
Yeah, let's focus for a second on Wander Franco, the top prospect in the Tampa Bay Rays organization. He has, as you said, gotten a ton of hype. And I've heard this. Let me ask you if you agree with this comparison. I've heard Albert Pujols at shortstop. What do you think?
I have not personally heard that comparison. I think it would be in regards to what aspect. I think that there's some similarities there, but I don't know if there's going to be the same physical presence as Pujols has. I think it would probably be more in relation to his just maturity and understanding of the game, the fact that he's developing so quickly. And I know Pujols is always someone who had a really solid understanding, solid head on his shoulders, kept a really cool head under pressure. And I think that's something that Franco is definitely doing as well. So I could see possibly some similarities there, and we'll have to see how that plays out.
You know, with Franco, we're talking about a guy, I think, that's a high batting average guy. Is that what you think?
Yeah, absolutely. That's been his mantra since he started, and he's really been able to show some good adaptation skills as he's moved up a bit. So definitely going to be a bat-first guy, but I think the defense is really going to be fun to watch.
I don't know how often you do player comparisons, but if you do, is there anybody that you can think of that compares to Franco in the major league system?
Not that I've personally looked into. I do comparisons every once in a while, but haven't dug too deep into him just yet. I think I'll probably have a better idea once the season gets going and I get some more looks at him.
All right, what about Mackenzie Gore? You mentioned him, left-handed pitcher, the top left-hander in baseball. And tell us about him from the Padres.
Oh, yeah, Gore is just every bit as solid as people have talked about. He's composed. He just turned 21, so he's still quite young. And he's always had such a good head on his shoulders, too. He understands really his role. He understands the artistic side of pitching. And I believe he's also a perfectionist, which means he's always pushing to improve and pushing to put out more productive activity. And so from, again, talking about the Padres system, they've proven that they can develop these prospects, the ones that they've been like slowly working up. And with Gore, for him, I think he just needs to continue to be challenged. He seems to thrive under that kind of an environment. So if they can get him in the right spot, keep throwing challenges his way, I think he's only going to continue to thrive.
A lot of people throw out Kershaw with Gore. I mean, you see a left-handed guy with a big leg kick. You know, the off-speed stuff looks pretty good. Do you see, I mean, obviously that's pretty high praise to be Clayton Kershaw, but do you see any similarities there?
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty valid. There is some similarities in the way that they carry themselves, and I think the way that Gore is developing, he has every right to have high comparisons. So definitely not too far off in the Kershaw comparison, and now it's just up to Gore to make that play out.
Do you know the ETA, I mean, for these guys up to the major league level, I would think, and then maybe this year, by obviously it depends on when the season starts, but Franco appears to be a little bit maybe further away than Gore. What would you say about that?
Yeah, Franco is a little bit further away. I think he's still got another probably 2 years. Gore was rumored to be considered for a possible call-up this year, but they delayed the season. It's likely going to be 2021 instead.
Now, I want to talk about Luis Robert from the White Sox. Now, he's going to be up with the Major League team whenever we have an opening day, I would think. Luis Robert, one of the more special prospects in the game right now.
Yeah, Luis is somebody who I've gotten a few looks at. Very, very daunting physical presence. He's 6'3", 185-pound right-hander, has exceptional speed in the outfield, really, really good arm. And for him, again, like Mackenzie Gore, it's going to have to see how he faces the type of challenge of getting moved up, getting more looks at, you know, the major league level of competition and seeing how that holds out. But definitely a lot with his profile to be excited about.
Yeah, and he's a very exciting player, too. Last year in the minor league, something crazy, like 30-30 as far as home runs and steals. I mean, that's a pretty exciting skill set.
Absolutely, and his power has developed really, really nicely. He's been able to boost his RBIs, too. So just have to make sure that can translate. That's always the biggest question for these guys to get near the majors or jump into it. They've got to show that they can maintain that, and that's going to make them all the more valuable.
Yeah, and with whatever Major League Baseball's plan is going forward in terms of getting games played, I mean, wouldn't you think some of these guys would get the call maybe sooner than you think because of possible expanded rosters maybe?
It's really going to depend on the calls of the organizations. One of the things that I've always stood the most firmly upon is the damage that can be created if you rush a guy developmentally just to try and get him up to that level. So I think the organizations are really going to have to use judgment in this, because the last thing you want to do is try and rush a guy up to put a few more eyeballs on the field and risk, you know, hurting his development track or even hurting him physically. So I hope that they do make the right call, but it's going to ultimately come down to what the organizations decide is best.
Well, great stuff, Emily. Last question. I know you don't know the answer to this. Nobody does, but when do you think we'll have baseball again?
As of right now, if you were to ask my opinion, I would think June or July would be more realistic. I know there's been some discussion about possibly doing something in Arizona in May. I personally think that is pretty excessive just because we are still, you know, such a tough spot with the current state of the virus. And the last thing we want to do is put these players or their families in greater risk. So if it were up to me, I would think June or July would be more realistic, and we'll see how the league decides to handle that.
Well, great stuff. As always, Emily Walden, you can check out her work at The Athletic, a national prospect writer for The Athletic, covering the minor leagues and baseball in general. Emily, this was great stuff. I could do this for all night. I really could. It's great hearing from you, and thanks for the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again for having me.
My thanks to Emily Walden from The Athletic for joining us on episode number 14 of the River City Hardball Podcast. You can follow her on Twitter at Emily C. Walden and check out her work on The Athletic.